And good evening once again. This is John St. Germain. This is Crystal Silence League Hour. Thanks for tuning in. Tonight's program continues our four-part discussion on relationships. That's right, I said four-part. This is number 3 of 4, and I'm glad you tuned in. Tonight, we're going to look at communication styles. We're going to look at communicating, conflict resolution. We're going to look at how to attract and keep and maintain your relationships. As you know, this is Crystal Silence League Hour. We are sponsored by Lucky Mojo Radio Network. We are broadcasting live from Chateau St. Germain. I am here in my smoking jacket with a glass of champagne looking out on my balcony at the wintry slopes of East Tennessee. So why don't we just take a little moment so everybody can stoke their fire and get a frosty or warm beverage of your choice and tune in. Just a moment while I get a little atmospheric music apropos of our hot and steamy topic. We'll be right back in a minute. And we hope you got you a new love or have an old love or a love of any kind. This is the Crystal Silence League Hour. And for those of you who don't know, any new listeners, the Crystal Silence League was founded around 1917 by Claude Alexander Conlin, the purpose of which was to spread prayer and positive affirmation for those who need it. And, of course, it was founded on the Internet again by the Independent Missionary Spiritual Church. For the same purpose, and prayer is always free at the Crystal Silence League, and you're welcome to go there at any time and post your prayer, and thousands of people, and I mean that literally, will pray for you. They will click on it, and you'll see that your prayer, the power of over 6,500 members so far, will pray for you. We also have a newsletter, which I edit. Feel free to subscribe to that, and you'll get a copy of that in your email every month. The practice of this program is that each month, each week, I read aloud a sample of the prayers from that, and we all pray for that and for the people who have posted. So why don't we do that right now and get started? Thanks so much. So the first prayer, I only identify these by prayer numbers and initials so that no one who doesn't wish it will be identified on air. Prayer ID number 34787S, who prays for the removal of disrupted influences in his relationships. So please restore their relationships to the peace and tranquility and remove all disruptive influences. And the next one is prayer ID number 34784SB, who prays for reconciliation in her relationship and her husband's. Prayer ID number 34783DU, who prays for the health and healing of the numbness and swelling of her hand. May her hand be healed. And prayer ID number 34782JK, who prays for the imminent crossing of the loved one JAC, who slips over the veil into the other side from this plane into the next. May that person's passing be peaceful. Prayer ID number 34781JK, who prays that JAC, RMC, RJC, and JEK be free of all negative spiritual influences, all negative energy patterns, all negative thoughts, all negative entities, and all negativity of any kind, and all times, all dimensions, and all levels of every being. And they pray for the light of God to enter their lives and cleanse them. May it be so. And prayer ID number 34780TT, who prays for K's recovery from drugs and alcohol. May all people who suffer from drug and alcohol addiction be healed. Prayer ID number 34779ST, who prays for her father Jay, prays for the healing of an aneurysm on his aorta. Prayer ID number 34778ZJ protects protection from danger for her brother and his family. Prayer ID number 34777KL prays for the relationship between Jay and herself. And prayer number 34775AL, that all goes well with her finances. We now have prayer number 34774KR, who prays for the mercy of the court on her court case. Prayer ID number 34773AL prays for her marriage and the reconciliation to have a happy, faithful, and godly marriage full of love. Prayer ID number 34772VR-Q, praying for the good outcome for the court case. Prayer ID number 34771MH, who prays great thanks for everyone who prayed. She's been depressed and now she's feeling better. And also, the medical test came out okay. So, you know, very good. Prayer ID number 34770KT, who prays that a loved one is admitted to school. Prayer ID number 34769TD, also praying for reconciliation, who prays that she and JM see each other very soon and that they start reconnecting. Prayer ID number 34767KT, who prays again for their son to be admitted to kindergarten class at the school in which he applied. And prayer ID number 34765AA, protection from danger, to keep some people away from her who's been threatening her. Prayer ID number 34764AL, who prays for salvation, peace, harmony, and good health to her family and herself. Prayer ID number 34762SD, prays for S and D's reconciliation. May they be reconciled. Prayer ID number 34761XD, may the court have mercy on them and help them get out of a very long sentence, and may the sentence be reduced. Prayer ID number 34760RH, she prays for her grandson M. He's been having behavior problems, and may his problems be healed, and may he calm down. Prayer ID number 34759JP, protection from danger. Apparently, this person mailed a letter, and she prays that letter gets lost or distracted from its target. Prayer ID number 34758LM, clarity in her relationship and resolution in the issues in that relationship. Prayer ID number 34757MM, prays for her sister for strength and clarity in her life. She's got a lot going on. Prayer ID number 34756CR, prays for the emotional healing of her ex-boyfriend, C. Prayer ID number 34755EW, hopes that he gets a job in a call center that he wants very badly. Prayer ID number 34754DP, also hopes to get the job that he applied for. Prayer ID number 34753HP, prays that C contacts her. Prayer ID number 34750S, who prays to keep evil from coming in and destroying a happy family. Prayer ID number 34749, prays for an affordable home. And lastly, prayer ID number 34748LB, prays for peace and happiness in their life. They've had a rough 2 years, and they wish for that to come to an end, and they pray for peace and happiness. May these prayers be granted. May all prayers that are posted on the Crystal Silence League be granted, and may all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May it be so. Well, thank you for joining us tonight. Our topics, as has been in the past few weeks, have been relationships, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And tonight we're going to discuss how to help yourself in relationships, communication skills, conflict resolution, how to attract good relationships. And what we're going to talk about right now, right this moment, this very moment, is communication. And psychologists who have studied such things have identified for us four styles of communication. Now, I'm going to tell you that there's many, many more. There are subtopics of this, and I think at some point I've identified officially 24 different types of communication other than the four that we're going to discuss, which are passive-aggressive, and assertive. I've heard of negotiator, divisor, balancer, adjuster, manipulator, things like this. But we're not going to discuss those because they sort of fall into the general headings of what we're going to discuss. So let's talk about these communication styles, and you'll probably recognize them. And also remember that these are adjustable. They're on a sliding scale, some more than others, and some are a combination of others, and some are different types in their life. But the passive communicator, the passive communication, this is a style where the person, they develop a pattern of avoiding expressing their opinions. They don't express their feelings. They don't protect their rights, and they don't identify or even meet their needs at all. Passive communication is born of low self-esteem. They believe, a core belief, is that they're just not worth taking care of, and their feelings are not worth expressing or even feeling at times. They do not acknowledge their feelings. Some of the modern jargon talk is they don't own their feelings. Dr. Phil, they don't own their feelings. So as a result, they don't respond overtly or obviously or observably to hurtful or rage-inducing situations. They allow these feelings to simmer, to fester, and they're usually unaware of this. They're very out of touch with their internal state. So, but once they've reached a certain point, and they have a very high threshold for anger, they're prone to an explosive outburst, and usually it's all out of proportion to the triggering statement, whatever triggers it. They'll take incredible lack of consideration from other people, and then something small will set them off. You know, will you pass the butter? You pass the butter. I'm tired of you taking advantage of me. And it's like, God, what was that? So, you know, at that point people say, man, you're crazy. You're losing your mind. Now, after the outburst, though, they feel really, really ashamed and guilty of how they did it. In my own practice, I see a lot of people like this. They can't say no, and they say that. They say, I have trouble saying no to people. But then they get so stressed, and they get so spread so thin that something, the only way they can say no is with a angry outburst. You know, someone, they'll say, well, you know, I just can't say no to people. You know, my fill-in-the-blank son, daughter, boss, coworkers, they're always borrowing money from me. And, you know, then they never pay me back, and then I have to bitch at them to get money back. And so I don't want to be a bitch. I don't want to be a jerk. You know, I don't want to be, and that's all they know how to do. If you say, well, you have to be assertive. You have to be assertive. Get your money back. Well, I don't want to be a jerk. They think being assertive is being a jerk or being a bitch. You see, they can't assert themselves. So this is the passive personality. They can't assert the slightest defense. They can't defend themselves very much at all. And the impact on their lives is tremendous. They're anxious all the time because they feel out of control. See, external factors control them. They're depressed because they feel stuck. And this is something I hear all the time. People tell me they feel stuck. They don't have very much hope, and they're resentful. They have a simmering resentment for the people around them because they feel they're being taken advantage of. Now, and this, in relationships, this is a two-way street, you understand. The passive person trains the people around them that they are approachable, that they are a Pez dispenser, they are a soda pop machine. Push the button, and you get a result. You know, honey, go get me a sandwich. Go get me a beer. You know, baby, do this, baby, do that. And men and women both are passive. You know, it's not just women, it's men as well. You know, honey, do this, honey, do that, baby, do this, do that, do this, do that. And the other person will put their own feelings on hold and do it. They're confused because they don't know what they feel. They seek validation of their feelings, and they can't ever really grow up. Since these needs and issues are never addressed, they never quite mature. Their developmental age never shows their emotional age. The emotional age can be quite undeveloped. So this is the passive communicator. On the other end of the scale is the aggressive communicator, where individuals express their feelings and opinions and their needs in ways that almost invariably violate the boundaries of other people. They're verbally and often physically abusive, and they dominate other people. They use humiliation, sarcasm, criticism, blame, attacking other people's beliefs. And I want to tell you that just like the passive personality, the aggressive personality is also born of low self-esteem. So both of these personality types in this communication style is born of low self-esteem. It just manifests in different ways. They're usually loud, demanding, overbearing. They have very low frustration tolerance, unlike the passive person who has very high frustration tolerance. Aggressive communicators are often very impulsive, so they don't think before they speak and act. Very rude, threatening. They don't listen very well. Now, the passive person does listen well. They interrupt frequently, and this is a very important thing. They use you statements a lot, and the you statement is something, the I and you statements are something that we're going to use quite a bit. Unlike the passive communicator who avoids eye contact, the aggressive person will pierce you with their eyes. They stab you with their eyes. They dominate you with their eyes. Now, the impact on their life is that they alienate themselves from others. They alienate other people, and other people fear and hate them, and they blame others for their issues. If things go wrong in their life, it's your fault. You did it. You made them mad. You made them mad. It's your fault they're frustrated. It's your fault everything's wrong. Now, the third type is the passive-aggressive type, and man, I got tired of hearing that in the 80s and 90s. Everybody was passive-aggressive. You know, if somebody said, will you help me with this? You know, no, I'm tired right now. Oh, you're just being passive-aggressive. You know, if you said, I got a flu, oh, you're passive-aggressive. That was the buzzword of the 80s and 90s, codependency and passive-aggressive. That was the big thing. But this is a, nonetheless, this is a very true thing. It's a style where the person appears passive on that surface, but they're really sabotaging a situation. They're acting out their anger in a subtle, under-the-table way. Now, a good example of this in the workplace, for instance, you smile and agree to the boss, and you make fun of him behind his back. So this is how it works in a relationship. You appear cooperative, but you sabotage. So you might acquiesce to something. You may go along with something, but you do it in such a way that you sabotage it. You do it poorly. You do it sullenly. You appear cooperative, but you do things in a way that annoys or disrupts. In a relationship, a good example of that is, well, what's wrong with you? And you smile, but you smile unconvincingly and say, nothing. Nothing's wrong. That's a classic one. Well, come on, I know something's wrong. What's wrong? No, everything's fine. You know, you got that fake smile, and you say, well, you know, let's go see this movie. Okay, do you like this movie? Oh yes, I like this movie. But you do it in this kind of sarcastic way. So passive aggressive communicators, they mutter to themselves, you know, will you do this for me? Oh yeah, I'll be glad to do it. All right. They usually don't acknowledge that they're mad or angry or frustrated. And they also use what's called an inappropriate affect. Their facial expressions don't match their feelings. So they smile when they're angry and laugh when it's not funny. They use sarcasm a lot. They deny that there's a problem. You know, like I said, they appear cooperative while they on purpose do things that disrupt and annoy people. And they use very subtle sabotage to get even. They'll hold a grudge for a long time, and then they'll make you pay. You know, they make you pay. You know that if you've done something later on, you're going to pay for it. So, once again, they alienate people. They remain stuck. you know, they're powerless and they remain stuck. And they discharge their resentment with this mind game that they play, but and real issues are never addressed. They won't address a real issue. If there's a problem in a relationship, they don't address it. They sabotage it. What does this leave us? This is a very, very interesting thing. Good self-esteem expresses itself in assertive communication. Assertive communication is a style that everyone should develop, and this is a style where individuals clearly state opinions and feelings, advocate their rights and needs without violating the rights of others. You acknowledge the rights of other people. This is born of good and healthy self-esteem. It comes from valuing yourself. You value your time. You value your emotional, spiritual, and physical needs. You're strong advocates for yourself while doing exactly the same for the rights of other people. You state your needs and wants clearly, appropriately, and with respect. You state them clearly. You use I statements, not you statements. This is the most important thing in relationships. You communicate respect with others. You listen without interrupting. You're in control of yourself. You have good eye contact. You have calm tone of voice, relaxed. You connect with other people. You listen. You're in control. You don't allow others to violate you, and you stand up for your rights. This is the difference between assertiveness and aggression. A good example is the way I am about people who smoke. You're allowed to smoke. You're not allowed to make me smoke. Your right to smoke ends where my breathing begins. I don't like secondhand smoke. I have an asthma condition. You don't have a right to make me smoke. If I'm in line somewhere and you're smoking, I'm going to ask you to quit. I'm going to say, sir, I have asthma. Would you quit smoking? And people get mad about that. Now, see, that's their assertiveness or their passive aggressiveness or whatever. But, you know, they're addicted to a drug, and they're being inconsiderate if they're standing next to me smoking, and I'm going to ask them to quit. I'm going to be very nice about it. I'm going to explain why. Sir, I have asthma. That smoking makes me sick. Would you please stop? Now, that's assertiveness. That's not aggressiveness. That's not passive aggressiveness. That's assertiveness. And now, if I was passive aggressive, I would get next and go, mutter. So, you know, there's that. You know, your right to drink ends where the road begins. You know, yes, you have a right to drink alcohol, but your right to drink ends where my risking my life begins. So assertive communicators believe in equal respect, confidence, and you have choices. You know, you have choices, I have choices. And nobody owes you anything. I don't owe you, you don't owe me. All we owe each other is respect. And you do not use communication to manipulate. Now, in a relationship, this is very important, the I statement versus the you statement. In times of stress and argument, this is where the rubber meets the road. And this is one of the most important communication strategies. And these are things you don't learn in school. You don't learn things in school. In arguments, it's very easy to say, you make me mad. You make me mad. You know, you're a jerk. You know, you're a jerk. You're just a bitch. God, you make me mad when you do that. These are called you statements. And you statements are the biggest way to cause an argument to heterodyne out of control. What is preferred is an I statement. I get frustrated when this happens. You talk about yourself, your feelings. I'm very frustrated because we're not agreeing on this. The classic toothpaste squeezing thing, toothpaste squeeze in the middle. And explain why. Here's a good example. Messiness. Can we talk about something? Well, sure. When I was a kid, I had a very messy family. So my escape from this was I was really neat. I became really neat, and I get really frustrated when there's stuff laying around, all the stuff around the house that's messy. And then you wait, and then the messy person will say, "Oh, so you'd like me to pick my stuff up? Yeah, if you don't mind, I would feel a lot better if stuff weren't laying around." And you see, that's assertiveness. Now, the other person may get pissed and start saying, "Well, you know, you're a neat freak. You're just a neat freak." And he said, well, I would appreciate it if you wouldn't call me names and recognize that I have, you know, a desire for neatness. And you keep it calm, you see. Now, I'm going to tell you that my second wife did not like me being calm in a crisis. Something would go wrong and she would freak out, and I would say, well, let's sit down and discuss how we can solve this crisis. And she would say, well, you don't care. I said, yes, I do care, but I don't see that freaking out is going to solve anything. Well, you need to freak out because this is serious. I understand it's serious, but let's discuss this. And she saw this as a sign that I didn't care, but I've always been very cool and calm in a crisis. I never saw any reason to lose, and I still don't, and I never did. I've always been able to detach from a crisis, and this is another rule of conflict resolution. Be calm. This has served me well over the years. In the show business and stuff, I often would show up at a venue, and it was an utter disaster. And I say to myself, and this is my motto, remember the rule, never lose your cool. So conflict resolution is very important. And there are very simple rules to that. To resolve conflict depends on four things, and these are things that I've developed over the years, and I found to my delight that most psychologists agree with this. You have to be able to manage your stress quickly while you remain alert and calm. And do you know you learn this if you study boxing? You learn this. You learn that if you get punched and you're dizzy, that you have to still remain alert and calm. You can't freak out. You stay calm under stress. You control your emotions. You have to take a step back and be objective. And you have to pay attention to the feelings, not the words. You have to go behind the words. And I'll tell you, the greatest lesson I've ever learned as a man, and this is not a sexist statement, women do not speak in complete sentences. You have to complete the sentence for them. And this took me a long time to learn, and I learned it from having a sister. My sister explained this to me. Women will not always complete their thoughts. They will give you part of a thought, and you have to complete the rest of it. A good example, in speaking with an ex-girlfriend about a current relationship, this happened several years ago, she said, "Don't hurt her, John." And I said, "Okay, I won't." And my sister said what she was saying was, "Don't hurt her like you hurt me." You see? And I didn't get that subcontext, but looking back on it, I did. You see, it was a passive-aggressive statement. Huh? Get it? And looking back on it, yes, that's exactly what she was. She used to do passive-aggressive digs at me all the time. And the way she said it was kind of like that, "Don't hurt her, John." And I thought, oh, okay, I won't. You know, why would I? But the complete statement was, "Don't hurt her like you hurt me." And then later on, she did something kind of pissy, but you know, that's water under the bridge. So pay attention to the feelings being expressed, as well as the spoken words of the person that you're trying to resolve the conflict with. Otherwise, you're going to get very confused because sometimes the feelings and the words don't match. The biscuits and the gravy don't come out even. And you have to be respectful of the differences. If you have one point of view and the other person has another point of view, don't try to win them over to your way of thinking immediately. It's not a debate. It's an attempt to resolve conflict, and that's what's very important. I don't know, debate is this thing. People want to win. They want to win an argument. They want to win debates, and there's really no great satisfaction to me in winning a debate if you're going to lose the relationship. And You have to learn and practice two very important skills to reduce stress in the conflict and remain emotionally cool. I want to tell you that I have many friends, many couple friends, who used to yell at each other a lot. And I remember I would say to these friends, now I have friends who may listen to this and go, "Hey, he's talking about me," but since I want to tell you that I have about six couple friends that this could apply to, If any of them call me and say, "Hey, you were talking about me," I can say, "No, I'm talking about those other people." But they would yell at each other a lot, even when we were out in public. They'd get on the phone and they'd yeah in the phone and yell at each other. And I'd say, "Man, that's not good that you all yell like that." He goes, "Well, that's how we resolve conflict." And what I saw was that no conflict was resolved. They would yell at each other until one or the other got tired and retreated from the field of battle. And so nothing ever got resolved. It was more of a resolution by exhaustion. You know, whoever got tired first lost the battle. And I'm going to tell you that as of now, every one of those couples are divorced or separated. They lost, in my opinion. They lost the point. They yelled at each other. And many of those couples, I said, you know, that's not how you resolve conflict. Well, see, we're passionate. That's our passion. That's how we're just passionate people. And so, you know, we express our passion that way. That's our passion. We have a passionate relationship. Well, they don't have a passionate relationship now, or if they do, it's not with each other. They never resolved anything. So the first core is, you know, you're angry, you're mad, you're hurt. Take your foot off the gas, man. Get out of there. If you're mad, don't try it. Get away from the anger. Wait until you're cool. Don't try to settle it while you're mad. Take your foot off the gas. Get away. If you're angry, mad, depressed, hurt, don't try to do it then. Get away from it. Go for a walk. Go to the library. Go to Starbucks. Don't tank up on caffeine. You know, get a green tea or something. But decompress and come back to it. Don't try to resolve conflict when you're internally conflicted. So you have to be able to be cool and accurately hear what the other person is saying. If you're mad, you're going to interpret it through your own filter. If you're tense, mad, angry, everything they say is going to make you mad. Or, you know, what do you mean by that? So, and you have to be aware. You have to be emotionally aware of what's going on there. So there's that. So that's part of conflict resolution. Now, to me, the most important thing about having a good relationship with other people, not just a love relationship, but any relationship, is having a relationship with yourself. If you have low self-esteem, if you have low self-care, self-loathing, how can you possibly relate to other people? So I don't know if it's possible for us to have 100% good self-esteem, but we can always work on it. I want to tell you that the secret to attracting people to you is to have charisma. If you want people to be attracted to you, you have to have charisma. And really, the secret of having charisma is to generate this positive energy. I'm going to tell you that when people tell me that they cannot attract people to them, usually if I meet them in person, they have this defensive wall up. It's a wall of defensiveness. They're tight. They have an internal dialogue going in their head, that no one will ever love them, that anyone that does love them has got to have something wrong with them, because who would ever love someone as messed up as me? If I ever get these people in a conversation, and I often do because they come to me wondering why, who would ever love someone like me? And if they get in a relationship miraculously with this wall up, it's like a rose with thorns, you know, a very beautiful rose, and if you try to get near it, you know, you go ow, you pull back, because it's like a thorn bush, right? You get pricked. And so they get in a relationship and someone's trying to be nice to them, and they feel uncomfortable. They feel uncomfortable and uneasy. There's got to be something wrong with this. You know, there's got to be a catch, or they wait for the other shoe to drop. You know, there's got to be something wrong with this guy. He's being too nice to me. And they want to go back to their ex who used to call them bad names and stuff. And so I explained to them, I said, well, you know what it is. You don't feel like you deserve this nice guy. You're seeing yourself through the eyes of your ex who thought that you were unworthy of being treated right. And I try to get them to see themselves through the eyes of this new guy who thinks that they're really cool. I say, see yourself through a different set of eyes. See yourself through this new guy's eyes, you know, who thinks you're pretty and funny and cool. You're still seeing yourself through your ex's eyes, you know, who tried to keep you down. But raise your self-esteem. And you don't do this overnight. You have to build momentum, and you start small. you have to start with small successes. You first of all have to have a vision. You have to have a goal, and you have successes. You do something that you like doing that you're good at. People tell me, well, I'm not good at anything. Well, you got to be good at something. Try something and set a small goal and achieve it. And you have to create something in your imagination. You have to create a compelling vision of yourself. See yourself as the best self you can be. And confident, self-assured, this is what you do in the Crystal Silence League, in Alexander's book, in Conlon's book. He says, you get up in the morning, I'm confident, successful, powerful. Put on some good music, feel these feelings, see your body, see yourself as a confident person, and then achieve that. Socialize, get out of the house and be with people, get off of Facebook and get off of Tweet and Twitter and all that and actually meet people eye to eye, see friends. Do something that scares you. One of our chat people, is there a method to do it without becoming arrogant? Arrogance is not self-esteem. Arrogance is a sign of low self-esteem. You want to feel good about yourself. You want to achieve something and feel good about yourself. Learn something new. There's no greater feeling than learning something that you haven't been able to do before. If you learn a new skill and something, if you're doing something today that you hadn't done tomorrow, you feel really good about yourself. Arrogance is a sign of low self-esteem. If you raise your self-esteem, then you're going to feel good about yourself without being arrogant about it. One of the things that will help you, arrogance comes out of fear. Arrogance, if I see an arrogant person, I know they're terrified. And I can tell you some stories about that. I'm going to tell you something unattractive about myself because, you guys are my friends. There is a part of me that goes back very far that's a lot like Hannibal Lecter, not the cannibal part, but I can peel a person like an onion. I can get inside someone's head very quickly, and I've always been able to do this since an early age. And when I was much younger, I mean early teens, I didn't have the compassion that I developed later. And, these bully types that try to push you around, I could get inside their head and reduce them just with words into terrified, whimpering hulks, just with words, because I could get inside their head and say the things to them that would just terrify them about themselves. And that I carried that through into adulthood. Some of these swaggering types who thought they were just the everything. I could say one or two words and just see that arrogance melt from their eyes. But it's not a skill that I like to use. It's I can do the opposite and say just the one or two things that make people feel really good about themselves too. But some people you want to puncture. You just want to puncture. And there are times I take out my rapier and slice people with the sharpest edge of it. And so when these people go swaggering around too arrogant, and I know they're doing harm with it, I'll unsheath my sword and I'll cut them down. Just a few words. I'll peel them like an onion, get into their inner core, that part of them that's terrified, and I'll pull that out. And I think I'm doing good. I think I'm doing the world some good. I only do it with people that I think are doing harm with it, who are hurting others with it. So address the fear. Do something that you're scared of and do it. Do it. Don't do it too much, but do something that scares you, and that's going to raise your self-esteem. Low self-esteem comes from fear. Do something that scares you. If you're afraid to speak in front of other people, take a class in public speaking. Do Toastmasters or something. Learn to play a musical instrument and play something, play a guitar for your friends. Do something that scares you. Do something that you're good at and get better at it, and set some goals. Now, I'm going to tell you, we've discussed this several times on this program, how Napoleon Hill asked people what they believed in, and he said that more than 90% of people don't have strong beliefs. Other studies have shown that over 80%, 80 to 85% of Americans say they don't have any goals. They don't have strong goals. So we have Thoreau telling us that the majority of men live in quiet desperation. Napoleon Hill tells us 90% of people have no strong beliefs, and now we have studies that say that 85% of people have no strong goals. So no wonder we're all messed up. No wonder we can't have relationships. No wonder we don't have happiness. do you know, I do a presentation. I ask people, I said, if you could wish for anything, what would you wish for? They say, and most people say happiness. When you wish for something, that means you don't have it. Most people aren't happy. And I can tell you right now the secret of happiness. I can tell you how to be happy. And I'm telling you right now, do something that you like and get good at it. Just pour yourself into something that you like doing. Other people won't make you happy. People think, man, if I find the love in my life, I'd be happy. No, because remember, other people aren't going to make you happy. You have to find a spot within you from which you can't be moved, a solid spot, like a rock unmoved by the wind and the sea, from which you cannot be moved. If you can find that spot inside yourself from which you can't be moved, praise and blame won't move you. Hot and cold won't move you. Pain and pleasure won't move you. If you can find that spot from inside you from which you can't be moved, you'll be happy. But other people can't do that. You can't. Other people cannot control you. If other people, if you're trying to find affirmation, happiness, pleasure, and joy from other people, man, you're going to be looking a long time. Now, once you have that, other people, you share it with other people. Once you have that spot within yourself from which you can't be moved, you will find it. So, to find these things, what will really help is to keep a journal. People don't do this anymore, but write down your fears, what scares you. Write down your goals, some things you want to do. Make a list of things. And this is one of the exercises they ask you to do if you're a passive personality. Write down your feelings, because a lot of people don't know what they feel. How do you feel in certain situations when someone accuses you of something and you feel resentful? How do you feel? And you write it down. And what would you like to say to person? You know, what would you like to say to someone if you're in a relationship where someone's bullying you? What would you like to say to them? Write that down and then say that next time. I have people I do readings for, and they don't know how to respond to people who are taking advantage of them, you know, who say, yeah, can you give me some money? And they don't know how to say no. I role play with them. I say, let's role play. I'll be you. You be them. And I'll coach them how to be assertive. So sometimes this is not stuff you're taught in school, and a lot of times this is not stuff you learn in your family. You come from bad, you know, dysfunctional families where the parents are aggressive or passive-aggressive, or you got an aggressive mother and a passive father, or vice versa. One of the ways to raise your self-esteem, and this is a great way, is to help others raise their self-esteem, help other people feel good about themselves. Help people, teach people, share your skills and your life experience with other people. Tell other people how much you admire them. Tell people thanks. Share your gratitude with other people. Look at your own life and see where you need improvement and get clarity on it. Work on it. If you if you don't like the way you look, exercise. And do a little bit. Don't go crazy. People go crazy with this. They hit the gym until they hurt. They go on crash diets. Don't do little things. Make a plan. If you set a goal, you have to have a plan. If your goal is to master the piano, okay, that's good. Make a plan and do it. So once you do that, you have to get motivated to do it. And you are going to need some compliments, some external compliments. So you need some a support group. You know, I know that contradicts what I just said, you know, that if you look for happiness from other people, but that's a goal in itself. You're not going to start out that way. Get a support group. Get people that are going to help you, you know, and say, you know, yeah, you're doing good. You're doing good. Share the fruits of your efforts with other people, because one of the things that really helps us is connecting with other people. One of the great joys I have, and I've always had this, I had a friend in Bloomington. We used to sit on the back porch for hours, you know, with a cold or a hot drink and just discuss the sorts of stuff like we discuss on the radio here, philosophy and trying to get to the root and the kernel of things. And that's just wonderful stuff. It clarifies the mind and it exercises the mind. So again, this is just some of the things we have. Now, a lot of times we're just afraid. We're afraid to connect. We're afraid to love. And this is a shameful thing, just a terrible thing. So A lot of the fear of commitment is a fear of intimacy. So there are ways of this. Look at your history. Why are you afraid of doing this? Look at your history and put down what the key issues are. What's happened in your history? Why are you afraid to do things? A lot of times you have a critical inner voice that tells you never succeeded anything. And this I want to bring up a very interesting thing called the Dunning-Kruger effect. And if you've never heard of this, I thought this was a parody. I thought when I first heard this, it was something from The Onion or a parody site. But this is also, by the way, one of St. Germain's laws of universal irony. I have 10 of those that I'll suspect one time. But it's rule number 3. Some people are too stupid to fail. But I want to go on to the Dunning-Kruger effect. From the report by the authors, David Dunning and Justin Kruger, the conclusion of it was the miscalibration of the incompetent stems from an error about the self, whereas the miscalibration of the highly competent stems from an error about others. So what the Dunning-Kruger effect is, a cognitive bias wherein unskilled individuals suffer from illusory superiority, mistakenly assessing their ability much higher than is accurate. So in other words, unskilled, aka stupid people, think that their ability is much higher than it is. Conversely, very intelligent people and very skilled people underestimate their abilities. People with true abilities tend to underestimate their relative competence because participants who found tasks to be relatively easy erroneously assumed that the task must be also easy for others. So people who have high standards set very high standards for themselves and are very critical of themselves, so they tend to underestimate their abilities and think that they're not very good at what they do. People who are very stupid tend to overestimate their abilities because they have lower critical skills, and they think that they're really good. Henry Ford said this of the Dodge brothers. The Dodge brothers had a very inferior product. They skyrocketed to success, and someone asked Henry Ford why this happened, and he said, well, the Dodge brothers are too stupid to realize that they're terrible. Sometimes people are too stupid to fail. They have a tremendously high opinion of themselves because they don't know any better. Really intelligent people are very critical. They have a high critical facility, and they perform very well, but they also see the cracks in their performance because of their intelligence. And they think that everybody else is as smart and as critical as they are. And when people tell them, that's wonderful what you're doing, they don't believe it. They think everyone's being nice. So I wanted to just pull that out, the Dunning-Kruger effect, because a lot of times, if not most of the times, we're our own worst critics. And a lot of our low self-esteem simply comes from the voices of unkind people from our past, from our history, that we adopt for ourselves in our own worst moments when we're picking our own abilities apart, and we forget about or we don't listen to the kind voices of people who genuinely admire us. So one of the best steps in building self-esteem is a quit comparing. Quit comparing. They used to say in the 12-step program, compare and despair. I'm not a big advocate of those bromides and things, but that's a very good one. Do not compare yourself to others, and really you shouldn't compare yourself to yourself. Now, the other thing I'd like to talk about is rekindling relationships. We're talking about new relationships. What if you're in a relationship for a while with somebody and you just realize, man, we've been in this a long time, and this occurs quite a bit. I've said, I've talked about people they've been married a while, and I say, how's that going? Well, we've been married 20 years, you know. I'm thinking, well, so. The marriage has reached kind of a stalemate. They just kind of look at each other. Well, that really shouldn't be. If you start taking each other for granted, there's something wrong. Now, so what's the difference there? You know, why is that the case? Why shouldn't a relationship that's 20 years old or 25 years old or 30 years old not be as hot as it was when it was a year old? I see no reason why that should be. You're just getting lazy. You're not paying attention. And, you know, there's nothing new. I know people sometimes tell me they get tired of, there are people who have relationships for 6 weeks or 6 months and they jump. And I ask them why they do that, and I say, well, I just get tired. You know, I like excitement in a relationship. And I usually say, if you want an exciting relationship, date an alcoholic bipolar. I said, you'll have excitement. You know, they'll sleep with all your friends, and you'll come home and all your stuff's gone. So I just say, a relationship is not the place to seek excitement. The relationship is where you bring excitement to. You have excitement outside and then share it with your partner. Believe me, at my time of life, I want my relationship to be as comfortable as an old quilt. I want it to be predictable. I don't want surprises. And I want it to be predictable. I want to know what's going to happen. So to keep that relationship alive, you remember when you were first dating, you had these little random acts of kindness. You just did things for each other, just little random things, you know, little presents and occasionally a foot rub and stuff. Keep doing those, just little random acts of kindness. And imagine that you're performing for an audience. And what will kill a performer, if you've ever performed, if your audience isn't paying attention, you just die. It's called fading. A performer will fade if the audience isn't paying any attention to you. If you realize you don't have the audience, you will fade. So you want to give your partner your full attention. So keep your cell phone out of the way. Don't have the TV going. Spend quality time with your partner. And that doesn't mean doing the laundry, going grocery shopping, taking the kids to the park. This means quality time together. So, you know, me and my girl, we have date night, and it's sacred. You know, we tell everybody, I don't care if what's going on. Unless the grandbaby is growing tentacles, don't bother us. So this is important to keep the relationship alive and be interesting. So do things that are interesting in your own life, not things you do together, and then you can, it's like that new thing where you're discovering new things about yourself. Now, if you've drifted apart, that means you're doing things apart, right? So you can rediscover. It's like having a new relationship. It's like, what have you been doing? Oh, my gosh, you've been taking piano lessons? What have you been doing? Oh, gosh, you've been reading these interesting books? So you share your the things you've been doing apart, and you show interest in that. You show interest in what the other person has been doing. So you do different things too. You shake up your routines too. You fall into a routine daily, so you have to shake that routine up. So you have to get that sense of newness again. So you do road trips. If your date night is going out to eat in a movie, do something different. Start new things. And also, you can get irritated with each other, and you get comfortable with being irritated with each other. So you have to postpone anger. When you feel you're getting irritated with somebody and you think, man, that pisses me off, I'm going to go talk to her about that. Don't do it when you're mad again. Also, there's an interesting thing. Plato once said, you can discover more about a person in an hour of play than in a year of conversation. So play games, and do things that are playful. And you can learn more about your significant other by playing with them than you can by fighting with them. And you can learn more by play than by debate. You can debate for hours about something, but you'll learn more by playing. And again, treat the other person with respect. Treat them like you would want to be treated. And this is such a simple rule, but one that is observed more by omission than by commission. Just treat them like you want to be treated. And keep the relationship playful and respectful. And once again, these are just things we're not taught. We're taught in this society to be competitive and hard. And an incompassionate, dispassionate. And also, do you know, we're also very critical, and we're seeing apparently criticism and being critical and skeptical is seen as a useful quality, and it really isn't. There's no point in criticizing each other. Praise the good points. Don't criticize the bad points. Praise the good points. Positive reinforcement. Praise the good points. And be an example. If you want the person to be more communicative and more compassionate, be that yourself. Always celebrate the anniversaries. Always celebrate the birthdays. Celebrate everything in between. Have all kinds of celebration. Also create special spaces in your house. Special times. Make everything special. That 20 years relationship won't be stale. It won't. I know couples that have done this, and it works really, 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 really well. These are just some of the things that I would recommend for any kind of relationship. People are getting impatient for the stone of the week. Oh, my gosh, all this helpful relationship stuff, and you want to hear about a stone. But, of course, it is about 3.5 minutes away. Our stone of the week, I hope this relationship stuff has been useful to you. Our stone of the week is obsidian, and obsidian has many useful qualities. One thing is very useful for scrying. You can use it as a scrying mirror, a scrying stone, or a scrying palm stone. Obsidian can have other minerals in it too. There can be gold shimmering in it, and these are very good for healing. You discharge them once a month under warm running water. There's a mahogany brown stone called mahogany obsidian, which promotes logical thought, and it protects against anxiety. Obsidian is used in magical fortune-telling rituals. It helps alleviate pain, reduce tension, release energy. It can be used to help staunch wounds. It's good for cold feet and hands. It increases circulation. It's used for anxiety and shock. It helps to ground you and center you. You can also do a very effective spell if you have obsidian points. You have a white candle, have the points, you have four obsidian points pointed toward the candle, and this sets up an aggressive energy which guards your place. It's good for protecting you. So obsidian is a very, very good protective stone. Obsidian is basically black glass. It's made from lava that is cooled very quickly, so it's a strong black glass. I'd like to end this session with something I find very pretty, very beautiful. There is a play that was written in 1982 called The Real Thing by Tom Stoppard. If you can find this online, you should see it. There may be some performances. I'm not sure. I read it when I was in school. I was a fop. You know, I was a literary major. So I was once an art major, once a literary major, and once an engineering major. But in this play, the protagonist, teenage daughter was cynical, and she was going through the ins and outs of falling in love. And he's explaining to her what falling in love is like, and he gives this impassioned speech. He says, "Falling in love, it's to do with knowing and being known. I remember how it stopped seeming odd that in biblical Greek, knowing was used for making love. Who's it knew so-and-so? Carnal knowledge. It's what lovers trust each other with. Knowledge of each other, not of the flesh, but through the flesh. Knowledge of self, the real him, the real her. In extremis, the mask slipped from the face. Every other version of oneself is an offer to the public. We share our vivacity, grief, sulks, anger, joy. We hand it out to anybody who happens to be standing around, to friends and family, with a momentary sense of indecency, perhaps, to strangers without hesitation. Our lovers share us with the passing trade, but in pairs, we insist that we give ourselves to each other. What selves? What's left? What else is there that hasn't been dealt out like a deck of cards? Carnal knowledge, personal, final, uncompromised, knowing, being known. I revere that. Having that is being rich. You can be generous about what's shared. She walks, he talks, she laughs, she lends a sympathetic ear, she kicks off her shoes and dances on the table, she's everybody's, and it doesn't mean a thing. Let them eat cake. Knowledge is something else, the undealt card, and while it's held, it makes you free and easy and nice to know. and when it's gone, everything is pain. See you next week. I'm John St. Germain. This is Crystal Silence League Hour.